Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, Donald and I are going to discuss a video that we watched here. It's called Hidden Human History Movie. I found it from a link from a page that I like on Facebook, and I watched it, and it was pretty intriguing. It contains a lot of information that Donald and I have actually discussed on this show, but we wanted to actually discuss the actual video itself and then some of the things that we kind of took away from that. Donald, why don't you give him a thumbnail sketch as to what the whole idea behind the video was?
A lot of the stuff in the video was kind of like a Cliff's Notes version of stuff that I was studying for like a couple years back in the late 90s. It had stuff like Atlantis, sacred geometry, Martians, all the stuff that, you know, we've discussed in previous episodes here on Take the Red Pill. I don't know if you mentioned it, but this was a YouTube video?
Yes. I'll post the link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, so nobody has to go out and purchase something or getting off of Amazon or anything like that. Cool. So yeah, it was like a Cliff's Notes version of all this stuff that I learned in 2 years compressed into, you know, 1 hour. The way it was presented, I thought, was enormous amount of information just thrown at you and like, okay. And the title even says, for your consideration, you know, it's basically all this information thrown at you and they say, so you can believe it or not. It's up to you. Yeah. And there were a couple things in there that I hadn't really gone much into or explored much. And I think from talking to you briefly, there were some things in there that you had found that were either interesting or that you had not explored very much either. And what were some of the things that, some of the topics that were presented in this movie that, you know, kind of caught your attention or made you kind of go like, oh, that was kind of interesting?
What I did was I took pieces that resonated with me and pieces that didn't. I really like the whole idea of the Lucifer experiment, because I think that with that, it kind of pretty much tells the whole story. The difference is the movie kind of put a value judgment on it. Again, this movie does pull from a lot of different sources. It pulls from the Flower of Life writings by Dromvalo Melchizedek and the research by Zechariah Sitchin. And there's a lot of other channel material that lends to this information. The one that resonated with me was, I encountered the same information in a couple of places. One that comes to mind is A History of God. I can't remember the name of the author. Again, show notes. That's what they're there for. That's why we have a website. The thing that resonated with me about the Lucifer experiment was the idea that consciousness cut itself off from source to be able to kind of discover itself without the safety net of knowing source was there. And the idea is that when that happened, we lost the capacity for compassion, and we lost the idea that we are connected to one another. What I like the idea of the Lucifer experiment is the idea that consciousness has done this to be able to, so that source can understand itself better by exploring itself better, by being untethered better, that it's not a evil thing, it's the source of all evil thing. It's just a chosen path for consciousness to take. I like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that reminds me of a line I saw in the Scarlet Letter. I think it was in the movie with Demi Moore. The one thing that caught my attention with that whole movie, Hollywood, being at Hollywood it up and
the based on the book, the classic novel?
Yeah, all that being, all the Hollywood parts of it being aside, it basically said, what is a sin in God's eyes? That started me thinking years ago on this whole idea of morality and good and evil and all the stuff that we had talked about in previous episodes on, I think we did a morality episode and the good and evil episode that we did. A lot of the thoughts that I had that I presented in those episodes came from that one statement, because it sent me on this whole idea of, well, what is moral in, you know, a human sense? What is moral in a source sense, a God sense? Kind of like what you were saying, where a part of God deciding it wants to disconnect from it, God source, to see what happens and experience that part of being disconnected. Mm-hmm. That was one of the ones I found interesting, because, well, if you start studying spirituality or anything, you actually, that you find, you run into this whole concept very quickly, that we're disconnected from source, we're disconnected from this and that. But oftentimes they leave out that whole part of, well, it's because of the Luciferian experiment. And I have to admit, when I first heard that, I was like, being raised Christian, I had kind of like a jump back when I first heard that, like, it's a Luciferian experiment. He's evil. And then all of a sudden I had to calm myself. So I thought they explained it very well, as opposed to other ways that I've heard it explained over the years.
Well, for those of who haven't seen the video, I want to paint a little bit of a picture of what we're talking about, just kind of the background of this. The whole idea of the movie is that it talks about the human history and human consciousness, and it takes it all the way back to Atlantis, and it takes it back to the Lemurians, and it talks about the involvement of the Atlantis and Lemurians taking consciousness and kind of on this curve of self-discovery. And then what it does is it kind of incorporates the idea that the Martians, which was the first Lucifer experiment, severed itself from consciousness, became very left-brained, became very warlike, destroyed the planet Mars basically as a habitable place. So the Martians came, a few of the refugees came to Earth and basically implemented their warlike, left-brained, technologically focused, non-feeling focus into the Atlantean society, which kind of led to the demise. So in the movie, what they're doing is they're explaining that the Lucifer experiment had taken place on Mars, and that's kind of where it led.
Yeah, and then and like you said, then they're like, well, this planet's screwed. Hey, we got neighbors right over there. Let's go take them over because we need a new place.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? What I find interesting about that movie with the sources, there's other ideas that there's some people that believe the Nibiru had a hand in this, and that they're the ones from that the planet is the planet Nibiru.
Yeah, Nibiru.
Now that these creatures, I don't know if they're the Nephilim or whatever, they're the ones who manipulated the genetics of the inferiors. So that seems like it's in contrast to the whole Mars idea.
Oh, actually, it's not. And, oh, okay. I'm going to mention this to you because, and for our listeners, it's really getting out there on the fringes. Michael Tsarion, and Michael Tsarion, has like this whole 60-hour DVD set, and I think I've seen most of it. Yeah, I had a lot of time a few years back, but there's a part in there where he is talking about this time period in history, in human history. He goes back and he's done all this research and he's found all these archaeological stuff and mythological stuff and kind of combined them all together, where he's talking about the Anunnaki from Nibiru and then, of course, the Martians coming in and that kind of stuff and the whole Atlantis type thing. And he kind of melds it all together and kind of shows you how, in a different way, how it all comes together. And each one of his pieces are like 3-4 hours long, and he's just sitting there behind a desk showing you clips.
What's his name again?
Michael Tsarion.
Okay.
If you are really, 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 really interested, yeah, check his stuff out. He actually talks about the Adamic religion or the Adamic what was it? I'm getting all confused right now because it's been years since I've actually read this or saw this on the DVD.
How does he tie the Anunnaki to the Martians?
He basically is talking about how the Anunnaki worked with the Martians with the Merkaba. The Anunnaki were here. The Martians wanted to come over. The Anunnaki said, hey, we'll give you this little piece over here. And they said, oh, okay, we'll take it, whatever, because we can't go home because we don't have a home anymore. And it was that whole thing. And so that's how Martians got set here on Earth with the Anunnaki, just as long as the Martians didn't interfere with their stuff.
See, I thought that the Martians had already built a physical Merkaba that allowed them to go to Earth.
Ah, see, that's where some of the myth starts getting mixed around, and I don't really know where the chronology figures into all this, because especially we're talking specifically about this movie that is our topic for tonight. The chronology with the Anunnaki and the Martians, if I had to guess, that'd be a little more difficult, because they seem to overlap at some point, but I can't tell you exactly where that was.
Yeah, and what I'm doing is I'm just kind of examining the whole thing. There are some things that I think are pretty good takeaways, and there are other things that I think are just kind of live in the realm of myth, and myth that resides in that area, that it has to be this way. I think that, for example, I look at the Christ story. And the Christ story has a lot of myth around it, and it has a lot of fact around it, but I think it needs to have the power that it has by having both the myth and the fact, because fact alone sometimes does not carry the weight that myth does, but myth alone has no anchor to our reality if it's not born of fact. I think the two work in tandem to be really powerful. There's a Joseph Campbell with The Power of Myth wrote a whole series of books about the function and the power of why myth works the way it does in our culture. And I think a lot of this stuff in Atlantis is born out of that. But I also think the other aspects is that it functions in just in a different level, a different vibration, or a different dimension.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like TVs and movies from Hollywood. That's kind of like our modern popular myth right there, even though it's more of a thrown together idea of, well, hey, let's put this piece in with this piece because let's take a sitcom, for example. Well, let's take a father, a mother, three kids, and have them living in America. Let's have him working at this type of job. And it basically creates kind of a format for what Hollywood believes is the general situation of America. And I think myths can come from that same kind of a place too. Myths are describing a truth. Some are describing a history in a way that is easily digestible by the layperson.
Well, I would go even further to say that myth is a created reality that actually becomes a reality from the myth. The myth is energized by the amount of belief that is accepted in that myth. But I think there's like little bits and components and pieces. You've heard me say this before, but there's a lot of elements of this, of channel material and material like this, because this, for all intents and purposes, this is channeled material. I think if you come up with ideas that have no scientific basis, but yet seem to have a validity that resonates within ourselves, then it's channeled material. But the channeled material, unfortunately, channeled material is filtered material, because it has to go from the residing in the whatever dimension or aspect of consciousness it lives in to be picked up by a human being. It's filtered by being third dimensionally perceived. And then this person takes it and filters it again by turning it into human language. Again, the analogy of, you know, did you read the book? No, I saw the movie. As Jim Gaffigan says, you know what I like about the movie? No reading. But anyway, that's why I think that there is, it does have a foothold in reality, but I think you have to understand really the power behind the myth of it rather than trying to prove every single thing that happened as happened. Some of it is actually of our own creation, but it's real because we created it, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it makes total sense to me. So since you brought it up, I have to ask you this question. Was there anything in this movie, in this 1-hour movie on YouTube, that you saw that you were just like, oh, man, that is just crap right there?
I didn't think any of it was crap, per se. I'm still not feeling the whole Martian thing. I do believe that Mars had civilization, but I think that civilization is currently residing in a different vibration. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't perceive it if we landed there, and whether they could perceive us or not, I don't know.
They're out of phase, is what you're saying.
What's that?
They're out of phase with our reality.
I think they are out of phase. It actually kind of reminds me of the whole Martian Chronicles books, and we probably mentioned that before, but... In the Martian Chronicle, Ray Bradbury's books, the Martian Chronicles is a collection of short stories about Martian pioneers. Mm-hmm. But they would often either perceive or not perceive each other back and forth, but yet they had a direct effect on each other, which was kind of a really fascinating, fascinating idea of just that kind of out of phase idea between the two worlds.
And Ray Bradbury, rest in peace, you know, was an amazing author by anyone's account.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
One of the aspects that I saw in there that just, or one of the pieces in there that I saw that was just really caught me that I had never really heard much about were the emerald tablets of Thoth or Toth. Or I learned to pronounce it Toth, but I've heard that it's Thoth. So if I say Toth, that's who I'm talking about. But the emerald tablets of Thoth, and I had heard the term emerald tablets previously, but I had not heard them connected with Thoth. And so I really had very little information about them. But one of the things that it said in this movie was that they could not be damaged by anything physical. And I was just like, okay, wait a second. My understanding of 3D three-dimensional reality is that everything is able to be damaged by something else, if we want to phrase it like that. Like, that's why they have diamond tipped drills, because the diamonds are considered one of the hardest substances on Earth. And so I was thinking, well, there has to be something in the universe somewhere that is able to physically damage these tablets. And one of the other things that it said is that they were written multidimensionally. Mm-hmm. Whereas one of the other terms I've heard is holographically, where it's not like reading a book where you say, and it came to pass, dot, dot, dot. No, it's basically one of those where somehow you get the information, but every time you look or put your attention to it, you get more different pieces of information.
Okay.
It'd be like every time you turned on your computer, you were instantly learned a whole new volume of an encyclopedia, just from the screen the first few seconds while it was booting up.
Yeah.
And that's my understanding of how that whole holographic information, multidimensional information works.
Okay.
So, and I found emerald tablets really, really just, I was like, oh, so Thoth basically put his account of human history plus his knowledge of, say, if I remember them talking correctly, physics and geometry and all this stuff, and he put them all in these little plates that, and then they were hidden, I think, somewhere under the Sphinx or one of the Great Pyramids in Giza or something like that.
Now, what's your thoughts on that? The hidden city and the hidden chamber and the disc that protects the Earth that they talked about in the movie. What's your thoughts on all that?
I don't know. It's one of those, I don't discount it, but I can't give myself completely over to it either. For me, I have to just kind of leave it in the realm of, oh, sure, it's a possibility. It's kind of like you hear a story of somebody's, oh, yeah, I climbed Mount Everest. If, let's say, they have no pictures or no, they didn't tell anybody or anything like that. They just left for, you know, a couple months, and all of a sudden they came back and people are like, oh, hey, where'd you go? Oh, I climbed Mount Everest. Where's the pictures? Didn't take any. Where's your accounts of money you spent and stuff like that? Didn't record it whatsoever. Basically, at that level, you're going on faith that, oh, this is my friend or this is my acquaintance. If they say they climbed Mount Everest, we have a choice of whether to believe them or not. And I kind of see that as the same thing with some of the information that was in the movie. It's just like, well, it could happen.
Well,
but...
yeah, but I mean, that's kind of a throwaway thing. So my question, maybe I ought to ask, what resonated with you the most? What really resonated with you?
I'm sure there's a lot more, but the first thing that popped into my head when you said that was the age of humanity at the time when the Martians came by, where basically every life form grows and progresses, and you can gauge kind of what their age is at any given time. One of the things that it said was, oh yeah, at that time us humans were like 12 or 16 year old girls just barely hitting puberty. And I was like, why girls? And then just as I said that, they're like, yeah, we were living out of our emotional body, and we were living very much out of a right-brained understanding. I can sort of grasp onto that. And then it said, and then the Martians came, and they were very left-brained. They were very warlike. They were very non-emotional. They didn't have an emotional body. They didn't know what emotions were. Or if they did, they're like, what the hell is this? We don't understand this. We don't understand what emotions are, but they seem kind of weak. It continued on to say that over time, they, by just their influence, they were able to switch the natural human's emotional way of seeing the world and reality more over to a mental way of seeing the world. And I had never heard it presented quite like that before.
You know, I think that it's those concepts that they talked about, the 16-year-old girl and the Mars warlike and things like that, and the humans. Remember, there was an aspect they didn't really go into very much. They're saying that there was a time that the Lemurians and the I forget what the Ascended Masters were called, but mostly the Nicols.
Yeah.
That human beings at that time were much more multidimensional.
Oh.
Do you remember them saying that?
I do not remember them saying that.
They did. They said that at the time, humans were... It was very beginning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, film. Yeah. Very beginning. Yes. Okay.
And I've said this so often that I believe that. That's the part that I really, really think is true, is that... And this is where myth comes into play. Humans were more multidimensional at that time. And what that means is that we lived in... In fact, they said that molecules were further apart and that we could manifest instantaneously. I think what that's saying is that we were not so third dimensionally tied, we're not so physically tied that we kind of were in and out of the dream state. Unfortunately, what I love about the illustrations, because for those who haven't watched it yet, it kind of uses these kind of cartoon, animated, literally animated, doll, almost like ragdoll kind of people to indicate the people, you know. And it's really humorously done too, and I like that too. But unfortunately, it really takes those concepts and makes them so much easier to digest. If you listen to the whole thing, you can't digest it as easily as you can with the graphics, even though some of them are whimsical and tongue-in-cheek. There's a lot of it that really kind of makes you go, oh, you know, because it kind of ties it together on a mental level for you.
Oh, yeah.
However, I think the disservice that it does is I think that it makes you see the Martians as creatures, and it makes you see the Lemurians as creatures, as these bipedal forms. And I think that the Martian aspects and the Lemurian aspects and the Atlantean aspects and the calls and all that other stuff is very much more ethereal, and it's much more almost analogous. You've heard me say this about analogy before, but I think that it's to say that there was a right-brained energy that came into our realm that had the same resonance that Mars has. And remember, these energies and resonances can create and form physical nature by following patterns and lines that are based on sacred geometry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my take on that whole thing. And it kind of occurred to me too, because they were talking about, and I want to revisit this little bit and then make a point on that, about the Martians kind of creating the physical macabre, and then it backfired and opened up first dimensional, and then released these first dimensional yet Earth inhabiting energies that reside in the third dimension. And it was validating for me because it tied back to the good and evil when I said that sometimes it's not these, what we consider these evil spirits or whatever.
Oh, you're talking about the good and evil episode that we did?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Let me clarify. In the good and evil episode we did, I had mentioned that I thought that these things that people considered poltergeists or demons or mischievous creatures, that what I said that they probably are just in a realm where they feel lost and the light is uncomfortable for them and they're trying to find their way back. I felt like that illustration, when they were saying the first dimensional creatures were opened up and brought into this world, that it was, that very much felt like a validation for me. And then the other morning, just I think yesterday morning, all of a sudden I had this thought that what a demon is a thought form that either has a person believing that A, they have no matter of choice or free will in a situation, or B, it compels them to have another person believe that they have no choice or free will in a situation.
Oh, kind of like a superstition.
You're going to have to tie that together for me because I'm not seeing it.
Let me switch it from a superstition to a curse.
Oh, okay. That
does that make more sense?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Much more sense.
Because to me, I see it as a super. It works along the same lines in a superstition, but it's much more obvious if you use the word curse. Okay, like, I have no control over this. I'm cursed.
Well, superstition does imply you have control because you basically are saying that I am manifesting reality based on following a certain pattern. And if I stay within that pattern or go without that pattern, I can affect the outcome one way or another.
Oh, you're talking about absolutely no control.
I'm talking about no control. One of the things that, and this might sound like a little bit of a digression, but we'll get back. But
okay.
One of the things they talk about with drug addicts, I don't know if you've heard that drug addicts are susceptible to taking on malintended energies. Like that drug addicts can carry attachments, energetic attachments, or entities that have ill will. Well, I'm just going to say that instead of that, they're thought forms. And a drug addict says, I don't have any choice. I have to. And the thought forms work in the very physically. They have an effect on your physical body. So when you say, I've taken this, I have to take more of this drug, and I don't have a choice. I cannot fight this urge. Where people do. That's how they go into recovery, right? Mm-hmm. Before they go into recovery, when they're giving into their urge, they don't feel they have a choice. The thought form is controlling them. So in essence, that would be what I would equate to a demon, is as a thought form.
Oh, and that's kind of like, because have you ever heard anyone say, my demons have followed me my whole life?
Right.
And that'd be kind of like that, where it's like, oh yeah, I've done some things and I have my demons, and I think when that said, that phrase, that idea goes along just with what you're talking right there perfectly.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of these things, and I think that's what was released, a lot of these energetic thought forms. I think they're these energies, they're just vortexes and pools, and just kind of, they ride currents. They ride the currents, and some of them flow naturally with sacred geometry, and some of them have to kind of force themselves into geometric shapes. And I think that the analogy of the Martians creating this manufactured Merkaba was, you know, energy needing to find a flow. They say nature abhors a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same idea that even these counter light energies still need to find a form. And sacred geometry operates within love.
Mm-hmm.
And when you operate within love, sacred geometric vibrations form very naturally. But when you're not operating within love, what you do is you try to force those sacred geometrical patterns to occur, but the energy that actually gives them propulsion, which is the energy of love and light, is missing.
Mm.
That's the analogy I get from the whole Martians manipulating these kind of things.
And when I saw that in the video, I thought, it's like, this sounds very Scientologist type way here.
I saw that in one of the comments.
Oh really? Oh really?
on the video on YouTube.
I didn't read the comments. Yeah.
They said it sounds very Scientology, but it's not meant to be made a religion.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
Where I can see how people would do that, but I don't think that's the intention.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Oh yeah, it's kind of like, well, we can make a religion out of history that has been written, but it's like, we normally don't. We might mm-hmm. take an aspect of a figure or a general or somebody, or we could break it down to forming a whole religion around one person or one idea, mm-hmm. but, you know, probably not a whole form in history.
Yeah.
So.
But one of the things I did like
yeah.
in that really cool thing, because remember I said the pyramids I thought were another validation point for me. Remember when I said I thought the pyramids were three-dimensional anchors in a way?
Oh, yeah.
And then the movie also said that what they did was they were trying to create this earth grid. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Grid? It was to create the Christ consciousness, because we, for I can't remember why, but we had gone from, we had to fall from third level dimension all the way down to first level consciousness.
Yeah.
And basically, the Ascended Masters, I think it was Thoth and Osiris and somebody else, and I can't remember.
And Ra.
Oh, Ra. Yeah, exactly. And for some reason, we had to get back from that first level of consciousness back up to third level consciousness in like 13,000 years or half right. rotation. I liked where they put in that, even though it was briefly said, as like, this has never been done before. that's like saying, going back to the 1960s, where it's like, we need to put a man on the moon and we have 6 months from right now to do it, where we have to build all the ships, get all the engineers to put everything together, train the astronauts, figure out all the math and get there. To me, they made the impression of, oh wow, this is, we don't know how we're going to do this. And then these ascended masters, these quote unquote gods, basically was like, well, if we create a consciousness grid that we can then charge, then that will bring the consciousness of the humans up, hopefully in time, to where it needs to be at this third level consciousness at this time.
Why do you suppose that there was an urgency and a deadline put on it? Because remember, they were saying that left to its own devices, it would take hundreds of thousands of years for a human consciousness to elevate to the level that it needed to be.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, and I may be mixing in some of what I've heard from other sources of information.
Like Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Tom Cruise.
He's a Scientologist.
Yeah, exactly.
With all due respect to any Scientologists out there, if it works for you, go for it. That's
yeah.
what I said.
Yeah. Oh, I wasn't browbeating Scientology earlier. I was just like, this sounds really yeah. Scientology-like.
I think there are some similarities to it. I don't know enough about it, but I think there are some similarities.
Oh, yeah.
I know that they deal with extraterrestrial energies and things like that. But go ahead.
But I think the whole idea is something is going to happen where we need to be at a certain level of consciousness or else we will be obliterated. And I've heard different kinds of stories where I think one, it was a huge solar flare that was going to a mass coronal eruption, I think they call it, that was going to pretty much fry the Earth. And if we were at a certain level of consciousness, then we would be able to protect ourselves with our Merkabas and everything, and the Earth Merkaba would protect itself. And since there was consciousness and love and light here on Earth, that would be a protection. The other idea that I've heard is that basically the whole 2012 stuff is when the poles shift.
If the poles
yeah,
shift.
Yeah, I will say that, yes. If the poles shift, that a pole shift screws up the magnetics so chaotically that it literally puts you into darkness for a little while. And from the part that I heard is our brains run on electromagnetic energy. And if the magnetics of the Earth are in transition, the neurons and how they fire and everything go kind of like a little wobbly for a little while. But if you're at a certain level of consciousness, you're able to shield your physical body, your physical thoughts, your physical emotions to not go all wobbly and crazy during the pole shift. Those are the two things I've heard of why there was a need to get our consciousness up to a certain level at a certain time.
Here's my theory on it. And I'm going to use the whole Mars thing too, that each planet is a consciousness in and of itself. And I think that each of these consciousness just has a natural evolution as source begins to learn and identify itself and learn itself. And especially in this third dimensional realm. And I personally think that each planet is multidimensional, but there's a frequency of this particular dimension that this planet is in. And I think what happens is with these pole shifts, it's following a pattern. It's following a pattern of the universe, and it's based on sacred geometry and things like that. And I think that what it is our consciousness needs to work in tandem with that same set of timing. Mm. And I think it's kind of a pendulous thing, because remember they said the swinging around of the precession of the equinoxes?
Yeah, yeah.
And if they said that every 26,000 years this happens, that's through several processions of the equinoxes that were kind of gradually going and going. And kind of as you alluded before, we took so much damage when through the Lucifer experiment that our consciousness was not growing at the same rate that the Earth consciousness was shifting and elevating.
Yeah, it was so, basically like we had graduated from elementary school and we were just starting seventh grade, and then all of a sudden Luciferian experiment happened and it wiped out a majority of our memory, and we had to start back from kindergarten. But we had to go from kindergarten through 12th grade in this certain amount of time, because if we weren't a senior in high school when this cataclysmic apocalyptic whatever event happened, then we would be gone, just no more.
Right.
So if you think about it, my understanding from the movie was we need to get this human consciousness from kindergarten to 12th grade in like a year and a half, as opposed to spread out over, you know, more of 12 years.
Yeah. I've read too, and I think this is in History of God and other channeled materials too, that this particular human consciousness, which is based on the Lucifer experiment, and in the movie they've implied that the Lucifer experiment has always failed in the past,
mm-hmm.
that it just kind of the consciousness just kind of snuffs itself. But the material I've come across says that this is a grand, unique experiment, and it is unique in the universe, that there is no other experiment that is going on in this manner in any place other than the universe, because it combines this, because of this whole free will aspect.
Oh, yeah.
That the free will aspect is just this gem. It is kind of the whole Lucifer experiment is kind of like separating from this, but the free will is kind of the God part of us that's play, and we don't even realize. That's why I say that the demon is forgetting that we have free will.
Oh, yeah.
Not only were they, was the conscious, we'll call it the consciousness council for this particular experiment, thought it was, it's basically like saying, you know, if all that is just pure love, and you have to separate one part of yourself from yourself, wouldn't you miss it? Wouldn't you say, oh, they're going to be alone and scared, and they're not going to know that really they're still part of us?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is they're like, well, no, it's going to be too frightening and lonely for this part of our consciousness, for this part of consciousness. And we're saying, but there's so much more we can benefit by doing this. We'd be so much more richer. We'd be so much greater understanding of who we are as consciousness. And then what happened is the experiment seems to fail time and time and time again. So now there's this vested interest to say, we really, really want to see this succeed, because we know that if it succeeds, it is going to be the most amazing journey we've ever could have conceived of taking exploring ourselves. So there's a huge vested interest. It's not like, well, it didn't work before, so let's let it burn out. It's like, if we can make this work, it's going to be so much greater than we could have ever experienced without ever having done this experiment. The one other aspect I really liked that I was not even aware of before that they talked about in the film was the 42 and 2 gods.
Oh, the chromosomes with the gods. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was fantastic. I love that idea.
Oh yeah. And I see totally what you're saying, because with the whole experiment, one of the things I've heard over and over again, like what you're saying as well, is not only is this not happening anywhere else in the universe with consciousness, but it's never happened ever in the history of all life ever.
Right.
This is kind of a unique consciousness experiment where Ra, Thoth, and who else?
I don't remember.
The third one, the third god,
yeah.
Where they were creating these anchors, these consciousness anchors, such as the pyramids in Giza, the temples in Machu Picchu in South America, on this whole consciousness grid that would allow the consciousness to actually come up. And that's why I found it kind of interesting too, how they were saying, yeah, they would wait around for a few hundred years or so until they actually found a human that they could talk to and relay some of the spiritual knowledge to, and then that person would go and spread it out to the rest of the humanity, and then they'd sit around, twiddle their thumbs for another, you know, a few centuries or whatnot, and do it the same thing again. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that Buddha and all the major religious founders, creators, were these people that they came to and they understood what they were saying and were like, oh yeah, let's spread this around. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, going like what you said with the whole genetic thing, it showed that the levels of consciousness, like I think first level consciousness was 42 chromosomes plus 2, and then we're at second level consciousness or something like that, and that was 44 plus 2, and the next one, the third level of consciousness, is 48 chromosomes plus 2 or something like that.
Right.
Oh, wow, they just connected genetics to mythologies of gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all of a sudden there was this whole moment where Stargate, the TV series, and, you know, just popped back into my head, because every episode is like, oh, well, that was the god that was over here and he did this whole thing and da 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 da.
Well, it's interesting you keep saying gods, because they didn't necessarily say that they were gods. They said that Thoth was one of the Nakal.
Oh, yeah.
And that Thoth was a resident, a priest of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
And what I look at it is what we call gods, and that's one more interesting thing to come from this. What we call gods, I think, are aspects of consciousness. And I think that what they were saying in this Egyptian mythology, when it was one of the Egyptian kings they talk about in there, the one that really kind of broke things open.
Akhenaten for 17 years.
Akhenaten, that each chromosome is an aspect of consciousness. That's what I got from what they were saying, is that each of these, you know, like Anubis and Osiris and Isis and all of these are aspects of consciousness. And that even in another level, so is Ra and Thoth and these kind of also are aspects of consciousness. And I do subscribe to, and I've always believed, well, not always, but I do believe this, and this does resonate with me, when they said that the Hebrews have an extraterrestrial origin.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah, they didn't really go much into that. They kind of like, oh yeah, and the extraterrestrial Hebrews, named Hebrews, were over there too. I'm like, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
And this is not, I've heard this concept before, and I've come across this before and read it before.
Oh, really?
So it's, yeah, and it's one of those things that it's like the Seth material. Of course, that's right. Now, it's like a remembrance more than it is a aha thing.
Oh, okay.
It's like that fits, you know, it's a resonance. Mm-hmm. That's a better way of putting it. The first time I encountered the idea that Hebrews had extraterrestrial origin, it was very much a resonance for me. I'm like, yeah, because the consciousness of Yahweh, it just seems different to me. It just doesn't, it seems like they had an understanding of elements that they brought with them from some other part of the universe that that seems like it was an introduction into the earthly realm.
Yeah, and from what you've heard, because this is something that I think I heard for the first time in this movie, is it safe to say that the extraterrestrial Hebrew that were mentioned in the movie were the ones that created the Jewish religion? Or is the Hebrew religion, or the Hebrew aspect of the Jewish religion, in line with and connected to the Hebrew aliens that were mentioned in the movie?
I think it was a way of understanding and living in the environment that created just a way of living. It was a resonance. It's like, I like to look at it as like, think of a food that you cannot tolerate.
Okay.
The reason you can't tolerate a particular food is because there is something about the energy signature of that food that is counter to the energy signature of your body. So when the Hebrews came here, they formed a way of life that allowed them to operate within the energy matrix of this realm, this planet.
Okay.
I think of this because why I think this is the case, and that's why you have like the eating things and like the food things, and also just understanding the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life, and also the Jewish writing. What's the Jewish writing called? The Hebrew language, the Hebrew letters. Every letter in the Hebrew alphabet has a perfect resonance. It's like you can, the sound of the letter and the shape of the letter are in exact correlation. Like when we say A, when we say the word, you know, like T, mm-hmm. it doesn't, the vibration doesn't match the way it's written.
Okay.
But it does in the Hebrew language for every single letter. Every single letter also is associated with the different sephira and such in the Tree of Life and the Kabbalah. So there's all that kind of stuff that is just that they were connected to. But I think that the actual kind of ways of living were them just figuring out how to live in this particular dimension and vibration and aspect of consciousness.
So that would be why the lineage of would be so important in the Jewish religion, from going back all the way to the Hebrew as when they first came to Earth.
Why the lineage is important?
Yeah, because lineage, from my understanding of Judaism, is that it's passed through the mother.
Yes, that's correct.
If you are genetically Jewish, then these foods and the way things you eat, you know, eating kosher is to your benefit because you have genetic disposition to that will allow you to be healthy in this earth reality if you follow those recommendations.
I think it's a chicken egg thing. In fact, I think that the Jewish gene line is been so incorporated. I think that the need to live within that environment is not nearly as high as it was back then.
Hell no.
Because the vibration was different. The pole shift was different. All these magnetic energies were different. And I think that the whole mother thing is just, it's just to validate, you know, if you've got Jewish lineage, it's pretty obvious. If you could trace it to the mother, but you can't, it's not validated through the father.
Since we're talking about mothers and fathers and lineage, one of the things that really caught my attention there was they were talking about, I think, two ascended masters mating on the fifth dimension and bringing that energy down into a physical body here, and kind of like Mary and Joseph, the whole Jesus story. I had heard of that before, but the way that it was depicted in the movie, I was like, that makes so much more sense the way they say that. Because
with the tantric meditation, you
yeah
mean?
Yeah, because before that it was more of an idea theory to me. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, there's no air in space. Well, I've never been to space, I've never tried to breathe, so I don't know. I'll have to take your word for it. This was kind of like showing somebody up in space trying to breathe. Oh, okay, I understand now.
Somebody up in space trying to breathe. I don't understand how that ties to the tantric
because sex. What I'm saying is when I first heard about it, it was like somebody telling me, hey, there's no air in space. But somebody going up into space and videotaping themselves trying to breathe was like this video, this movie, and the way that they depicted it.
It made a better illustration for you to be able to grasp the concept.
Exactly. I understood it much better. Like, okay, I see. I have a better understanding of how that could happen and everything, because for the longest time, it was just like, how can just fifth dimensional, whatever dimensional energy just appear physically? Mm-hmm. I understand the whole thought form, you know, aspect of, you know, thoughts become things, but, you know, this is, to me, the idea was like, I want an orange. Bing! There's an orange out of thin air right in front of you. And, and you know, it's like, oh, it still had to go through the whole birth process and everything, but it was able to be, the thought was able to be implanted, kind of like in vitro fertilization from fifth dimensional reality.
I didn't get it as much of a thought as I did pulling in a particular aspect of consciousness in utero.
Okay.
That's kind of the way I got it, is that, and that I think that what they did was is they probably did a lot of praying and a lot of meditation and a lot of focusing and really trying to connect and draw in that consciousness. And I think there's a lot of other complicated elements to it, but who knows? But I think I was trying to grasp the whole Christ consciousness through tantric sex idea too, and that's what's coming to me right now. I didn't.
Oh, you didn't get that?
No, I mean, I understood the idea of pulling in that Christ consciousness, but the actual mechanics of the tantric sex didn't click for me until we had this conversation.
Oh, so. Okay, gotcha. I'll tell you what, David, recording these podcasts with you, I come away from the end of the episode just from our conversation going, I understand that concept so much better than I did before this episode started.
Oh, we both do. Yeah. We both do, definitely.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before because you get two people like us sitting down discussing stuff like this where we have a similar knowledge base, and it's just like, oh, I never considered that. Well, then what have we come up to in conclusion with? That's kind of cool, too. And I'm hoping that our listeners get, you know, at least a little bit of that, if not a whole bunch of that, like we do we're recording.
Yeah, so I'm hoping so. Well, according to Darcy, she really found a lot of value in it. So I'm hoping that she can speak for a lot of our listeners.
Oh, yeah.
So here's what I want to ask you. If you were to wrap up, because in what you just said, you said that there's a lot of things that really kind of gain new light for both of us as we talk about a topic. What did you take away from this movie after the conversation we just had, as opposed to when you first watched it?
For this episode we're recording right now, one of the things that has really caught my attention is, okay, where is the timeline crossover between the Martians and the Anunnaki? If they're both true, then they have to come around somewhere at some point and cross over at some time. And it's been so many years since I've actually gone through the Michael Tesserian information that I may have to go and revisit that. And so for me, it's basically reignited an interest in, wait a second, there's the whole belief that Martians came down to Earth, but then there's the whole thing about the Anunnaki being here. And I personally kind of lean more towards the Anunnaki story and the Zechariah Sitchin story, but then I don't want to just disregard the Martian idea outright, because maybe there's something where they happened at the same time, but I just can't wrap my head around it right now. So that's kind of what I got from this episode from the movie. How about you?
Well, what I got from it was there was the, because when we walked into it, I had trouble with just the whole Martian concept. Overall. I just did. I was like, well, no, not because I hadn't heard it before, but it just wasn't resonating with me. I mean, again, I do believe that there's been life on Mars and things like that. But I think what helped really tie it together through the conversation we had was this understanding that Martians coming here wasn't, you know, the ships and landing and stuff like that. It was just more of attraction of a energetic consciousness eddy, I guess, if it were like a concentration of consciousness of a certain type that was resonated or had a resonance or frequency of origin from Mars that through proximity to the Earth was able to, the Earth picked up that kind of resonance and frequency to kind of incorporate it into its version of the experiment here. So that kind of is what was a lot of clarification for me, I think.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah. It never gets dull. I'm always amazed that, you know, my understanding of what we're talking about from before the episodes to after the episode.
yeah, exactly.
So David and I would like to thank all of our listeners for taking the time to hear what we had to say and jibber jabber about what, in this episode, the hidden human history. And if you're a longtime listener, we thank you for your patronage. If this is your first time listening to us, we hope you have enjoyed it.
And to get the link for the movie Hidden Human History, come visit our website where we'll post a link to it. And you can also find it on Facebook. Our Facebook is TTRP Podcast. And you can actually listen to our episodes on Facebook now too, which is really cool. And you can also go to our webpage, which is TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com. We will have the link to this movie and all sorts of other things.
Very cool. So for Take the Red Pill, my name is Donald Dalton. hoping your history is uncovered.
And I'm David Deer. Remember, whatever history you believe and perceive may actually be true. Or not.
Or not. Exactly.